You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as it so often is on this particular radio program, it is an embarrassment of riches tonight here on TPC. You've already heard from Paul Craig Roberts, the Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury under President Ronald Reagan, former associate editor and columnist of the Wall Street Journal, also a professor of economics at no less than six major American universities. Dr. Roberts was back with us at the beginning of the show in our first hour to talk about the situation, the ongoing escalation between Russia and the Ukraine, very informed opinions. And then in the second hour, yours truly and Keith Alexander covered a variety of news headlines. But now, coming your way, is a guest, fantastic guest, nothing less than entertaining and engrossing, making his debut appearance. It is a social media influencer, a serial entrepreneur. I love how he describes himself as that because it's so true. A digital soldier and a citizen journalist. It is Pepe Deluxe himself, Don Essery. And he's on the show for the first time tonight, even though we've talked a few times before. How are you tonight?
I'm doing way better than I deserve to be, like Dave Ramsey used to say.
Well, if you cut up your credit cards like Dave Ramsey told us to, we're all be doing good, I guess. But hey, Don, listen, it's great to be on with you tonight, or to have you on with us, I should say. To call yourself a serial entrepreneur is to not do you enough justice. I called you earlier this week, and we've been in contact since last fall, but I called you earlier this week and I said I don't necessarily know how to introduce you, because normally when I have a guest on, well, we can introduce them as this, but you actually have your fingers in so many pies, I didn't know where to begin. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background and your business interests.
Well, ever since I was a little boy and the girls made fun of my shoes because I had Cougars on and they weren't the Nikes. I didn't know Nikes was so woke then. You know how that goes. But I did like girls, and I knew they liked people that had cooler stuff on. So I always had a side hustle as a young man. I had a grit newspaper route before I was 10. I had sold Mason shoes in our neighborhood. I was always hustling. I had my first clothing store at 18 years old with a partner named Ray Aker. We're still friends today, and went across the country to Arizona to that pit thing that Greg Phillips and Catherine Engelbert said they were inviting 100 of the top influencers on earth. I guess one couldn't show up and they gave me an invite, and I went, and we carried merch across the country, and here he was, the first guy I ever went in business with. We enjoyed it. We had a good time.
But tell us about the vast and varied business interests. I mean, everywhere from, well, cars to you name it.
Well, the car dealership's my brother's idea, and my main job there is just to market. And we have a team there that does the finance, the title, you know. We don't have a lot of cars on the lot right now because nothing's moving, and it's not worth, I mean, you buy something that could be worth $1,000 less, so we're just targeting things for friends and targeting our other business interests until we feel like, you know, building our inventory up when things are going to get better.
We were actually in a dual interview on Sam Bushman's prestigious Liberty Roundtable program earlier this week, and you were talking about the fact that this whole thing, this whole woke green electric car thing, is not a seller on the lots.
Not really. I mean, we do have some people that'll buy it, and it's like anything. If you buy a deal, you want to get it if it's in want. And for a while there, they were. Tesla's probably still would be if you just can't find them. And so for us, we just don't find many of them, and it's going to be gas for a long time, in my opinion. I mean, I don't see how we can do it. There's no way.
Well, so how do you have business interests in so many varied fields? So we talked a little bit. I mean, I have
wonderful
particular
people. My brother makes fun of my car knowledge, right? And he's my partner in everything except for this new project. But Scott Essery, my brother, is the best buyer of anything on earth. And he loves to buy cars. He was doing it ever since we started our first business venture together in 2001, which was an independent sales organization to sell credit card processing to merchants across the country. We're experts at point of sale, online. In fact, we were the guys that got General Flynn's event going when John, which is now Patriot Voice, was in Texas, had an event going. They shut him down over his politics. We got him going in 12 hours so that they could still have their event.
You're talking about General Flynn, the General Flynn.
Yeah. The event they had a couple years back in Texas, we got that event going in 12 hours and saved it. And then that was John's event, though, and General Flynn was a speaker. And so then we saw people getting cut off for Stripe and Shopify. So we have friends that helped us figure out how to go around them. And we use our own, and we can show people how to do their merch page and not worry about being shut down over their politics because we're skipping all their tools and processors.
So how did that happen? How do you have so many varied business interests from car dealerships to online credit card processing? And that's, believe me, I know this guy, folks. That's just the beginning of it. There's more than that. How do you have your hand in so many different pies? And by the way, you know, and I know our guest right now knows we have been shut out from online credit card processing due to the woke tyranny for the last couple of years. Stay tuned, everybody that has to now write a paper check or send in a money order or well-concealed cash to support this talk radio program. We may be back in the e-commerce business here pretty soon. But how, Don, do you do that? How do you car dealership, online credit card processing, and much more than that that they don't even know about yet?
Well, there's a few questions you had there. One is why so many businesses? Well, I have really good people around me, and I learned from Rich Dad Poor Dad the difference between being an employee, being self-employed, being a business owner, and being an investor. And so a business owner is someone who can take off 6 months and the business is still ticking. Then you own a business. Otherwise, you own a jobby job. You're self-employed. So once you learn the systems, you can create your jobs from janitor on up and do all the jobs back up, create a job, and back out of the business. That's what I did for the credit card processing world. And Dennis Cranford and Scott Esri just ran the show with Brad Rader, who's, gosh, he's killing that. And we were the first ones to bring the cash discount around to where people don't have to pay the rate anymore for the cards.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I got to commend you and salute you here publicly and here on the AM radio airwaves tonight. So many people in business would be so concerned after number one that they would flee at the very first sound of the shooting. You do all of this as an outspoken patriot, a MAGA guy. You do all of this and you don't back down and you have faced the heat and you still endure. That is a lesson that needs to be taught. What can you share about that?
Well, my brother and some other people didn't like it for the first year or so. It wasn't fun for anybody when their nephew, my nephews and nieces are saying, is your daddy a racist? And, you know, and that's not true. And it's all created. Just like all, you know, you're talking earlier, it's created by the media. Even the stink, even the Black Lives Matter stuff was infiltrated by the CIA. I mean, they own all the drug routes. They own the Bloods and the Crips and created them. Do you know what the Blood means in the Hellenistic Hebrew? It means Cain. You know what the word Crips means? It means cannibal. You know what happened when you put Cain and Abel together? You have cannibal because they eat each other because the devil has done your tricks. Why should you learn anymore? Because we're fighting black versus white, rich versus poor, masked versus unmasked. That's for...
Hold on right there. Don Essery back right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah, a message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
So I was just talking to Don Pepe Deluxe Essery in the break. This is a man with multiple business interests who's never backed down. And as I often say on this program, courage is contagious. And if he can do it, you can do it too. We can all do it. He had nothing more or less to lose than the rest of us. And he has shown a solid front.
He's like a cook at the Waffle House. He's got more irons in the fire than anyone else and keeps it, doesn't burn anything.
And he serves it up good and fresh and hot. That's for sure. In the event, Don, I want to talk to you now, shift gears just a little bit to January 6th. So we had racial unrest in Memphis just last night, still this weekend too. And that's not unusual, but they are... compare and contrast that, which we saw with the George Floyd riots compared to January 6th. Now, one were called peaceful protesters as they were burning down cities and sacking police stations. They were peaceful protesters.
Causing billions of dollars worth of damage.
Billions of dollars worth of damage. They took over basically downtown Seattle for any number of weeks.
In Portland.
But they were peaceful protesters. The people who were waved in by Capitol Police into the Capitol building on January 6th, they were violent, racist insurrectionists. And I bring that back up because a man by the name of Richard Bigo Barnett, that was the man who had the audacity to put his feet on the desk of Nancy Pelosi. He didn't burn down the Capitol. He didn't sack a police station. He didn't do any act of wanton violence or terrorism. He put his feet on her desk. Maybe he shouldn't have done it. But he is going to prison now, maybe for the rest of his life. The average sentence for those who were involved in January 6th, who went into the building, again, at the welcome of the officers at the door, I had read that it's a median of 4 years of prison sentence. Could be longer for him.
None of it will last. When Trump's in, he'll pardon them. It's all a show.
You think so? You think? Well, that you have more faith than I do. You think so?
I do. Yeah, they'll all be pardoned. This is ridiculous. They just want to get us so mad we'll react with violence, and then that way they can get us out of the way and take our guns. It's all orchestrated.
I presume something, though, which is that Trump's going to get elected. Now, you don't see any road bumps on that?
With election fraud?
I don't know if we'll have the election or if that's the way he'll come back. I just think there's something going to happen that it's a long conversation. But I would say a lot of it's orchestrated. Even what you think the violence in the street, they're trained to do it by the CIA. It's made to get white people mad at black people. And it's made black people to get mad at white people when they see the opposite. And the news is doing all of this because they need us to not be paying attention to, like, the Haiti stuff and the Russia stuff and the Ukraine stuff and the
Pfizer stuff.
But yeah. Like, all that can be fixed. Like, look, they're by design. Deep state's more racist than anybody else on earth. I mean, they hate white people the most right now, obviously, but they hate black people too, though, see? And that's why I think COVID was created to target people of color and vitamin B deficiency, and I believe that Ukraine had bioweapons that had DNA targeted towards Russia. I mean, there's a lot people don't know. I think most people are normies on average, and When you understand what really happened in Haiti, the Clinton Foundation will be arrested and their charges will be crimes against children. That's what's going to happen when John Durham's
they've been
done.
Doing this for years. They did it in the civil rights movement at the Highlander Folk School. All of that, all those so-called spontaneous protests were scripted.
Well, let me say this very quickly.
Hold on. But more people are awake than ever now, and they're more caught now than ever now, and they're panicking now more than ever now, and more normies are waking up than ever now. When I first started, there wasn't many of us. Now we're like 17% of Earth. Like, we're the news. We're it.
And it's okay, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
You got 50,000 followers on Truth Social. You are a social media influencer.
That's not why, really. I think it's because we have a group that's been together for 5 years longer than most people go to high school together during the start of all these. Like, most federal indictments take 4.5 years if you're a normal person. Well, it's time. So all of our work's about to be proven, in my opinion, and you're going to get to see, you know, like, anyway, go ahead.
I want to plug the contact information, but I got to get to this. So we've got now a man with multiple business interests. He's a social media influencer, 50,000 followers on Truth Social alone, using it all for good.
I'm the smallest of our friends, though. I'm like the smallest, like 58 of my friends.
You're being modest. I appreciate that, but you're being modest. So January 6th versus BLM, we just talked about that. One were peaceful protesters, if they were burning down cities. January 6th, they were violent insurrectionists. You were there at January 6th, though, and you got a knock on the door from the FBI. Tell us that story. You got a knock on the door from the FBI. You didn't go in the Capitol, but they still visited you. Tell us that story.
They walked in the car dealership, and I was talking to a lady, and they looked like they were trying to interrupt. I thought they were salesmen, so I directed them to, hey, go over here, guys. I'll get right with you, you know. And so when they come over, they flashed their badges and wanted to go to the office. They had masks on and vests and khakis, you know, just like you see in our memes that we make of them, making fun of them all the time. And that's kind of what they look like. And I was disappointed. I expected Men in Black or, you know, but they asked me, was I in D.C. January 6th? And I said, of course, you know, I was. And they said they had a warrant, you know, for dinging our phones, because I accused them. That's how they knew. And they knew where I was all day. They asked me if I was inside. And I'm like, no, I wasn't inside. You know, I wasn't inside as well, because there again, you knew where my phone was all day long. And so it became 30 minutes in all of back and forth to where I got to preach at them and ask them where they were when they was peacefully burning the cities down last summer, you know, at the time. And just all these things and how they were just put up to it for narrative to make Trumpers look bad and to arrest them, and how they deleted my first Facebook, which hurt our business really bad, our car dealership. It hurt us really bad because I was our social media guy. And so I had to hire somebody to help us do that. And it was just, I was mad and angry over losing that. And I was meaner to them probably than I should have been. Because, you know, it comes from on high. And I know there's probably some good FBI, but they're not standing up like they should. And
Tell us what you said. They said, you know, I know you've told me this story before. One of them
said, it's an Efren Zimbalist FBI anymore.
One of them said, I'm a patriot. What did you say?
I said, well, maybe you can get you a job at Space Force, because they're above everything right now. And they see everything and they have everything. And they'll be the ones that show you everything later on when all this goes down. You'll see it.
Yeah. But one of them tried to take their card back from you because you weren't backing down. One of the FBI agents
He didn't know I had a social media presence this big. At the time, I was showing, the media I used to be part of, they have 254,000 that I just kind of stepped down from because I'm so busy, you know. And but they're huge, and they just broke off Badlands Media, which is huge. So, like, he saw way more than just 55. I got 66,000 in Telegram. That's just my true social. And so, like, that one got scared and asked for his card back. I'm like, no, I'm not giving your card back. And so I kept it. And I told him, but I wasn't going to blow up who he was or anything like that.
So you defied any legal advice that any lawyer would give you by saying lawyer, 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 lawyer. I don't want to talk until I have my lawyer. You engage them and you back them down, which I wouldn't advise to anybody else, but you could pull it off.
Well, you should learn the law and you should be a lawyer. And that way, even though you're not a lawyer, you know the law to where when you walk in a courtroom, you know how to make motions on your own behalf and make them move on your behalf, because that's your place. Everybody in there should fear you, not because you have no money agenda and you're not tied to the good old boy network. I think every average citizen should take 2 weeks to get a law degree.
Don, listen, 30 minutes isn't
enough
with
program.
You.
Sam Bushman had him on a show before. I think it's
well, Sam. I was on with you and Sam Bushman earlier this week, and it was so enthralling and riveting and impactful that I couldn't get you on quickly enough. So we had you on as quickly as we could, which was our very next show, along with Paul Craig Roberts tonight. But listen, we want to talk to you more, and we want more people to find out about you. If people want to learn more about you, where can they go, and where should they read?
Telegram's one of my favorites, along with True Social. Those are my two main ones. This week, I'm Donald Gibson on Facebook. We'll see how long that lasts. And then this week, I'm Pepe Deluxe 17. I've had 16 Twitters. I mean, we used to measure our impressions, me and my friends together, and we averaged 900 million impressions on Twitter before the deletions. They had to get rid of us. They had to get rid of us. Even Elon's not brought us back yet. We're still not
well,
back.
Well, yeah, he's been hit or miss. He's been better than the alternative, but not everything we would want him to be.
Well, he didn't put Trump back before the midterm. He didn't put us back.
Yep, that's right.
I mean,
that's right. Hey, listen, we got 10 seconds. Where can people go? If you got to tell them one place, where do they go?
Pepe Deluxe on True Social. Look me up on Patriot Switch / Pepe D and the Pepe PatriotSwitch.com / Pepe D.
All right. That's it.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Barmish. Former President Donald Trump held his first campaign rally of the 2024 election season as he spoke to supporters in South Carolina.
As president, I will bring back peace through strength. Peace through strength would have never happened. If I was president, there would not have been a war with Russia in Ukraine. Zero chance.
Trump also addressed Republicans in New Hampshire. The Memphis Police Department is deactivating its Scorpion unit in the wake of the Tyree Nichols beating. Memphis Police, posting a statement on Twitter Saturday, said that in the process of listening to the Nichols family and community leaders, it was in the best interest of all to permanently deactivate the unit. Former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe told CNN that this is the time for the police chief to be even more proactive.
I'd really like to see this police chief take those next steps, maybe bring in outsiders, possibly the Department of Justice or others, to take a stem to sternum look at this unit and other units that she may have concerns about.
Five ex-officers face murder charges. ChatGPT is gaining momentum as a go-to AI application. Is it a help or hindrance for students, though?
A University of Pennsylvania professor wants to overhaul curriculum because an artificial intelligence bot passed the MBA exam. In a white paper published by the Wharton School of Business, the professor says ChatGPT-3 scored a B on the exam. Says he's concerned students could use AIs to pass classes and exams to get their MBAs without actually knowing the subject matter. ChatGPT has also been given and passed a bar exam and has written business papers and scripts for television. I'm John Schaefer.
The Cincinnati Bengals have the most support heading into Sunday's AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. That's according to Twitter hashtag data. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right
now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, and enter promo code USA, or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Like many of you, last month I watched that giant masquerade ball up at Madison Square Garden, where 20,000 liberals and radicals came dressed up as moderates and centrists in the greatest single exhibition of cross-dressing in American political history. A militant leader of the homosexual rights movement could rise at that same convention and say, Bill Clinton and Al Gore represent the most pro-lesbian and pro-gay ticket in history, and so they do. There is a religious war going on in this country. It is a cultural war as critical to the kind of nation we shall be as the Cold War itself, but this war is for the soul of America. And in that struggle for the soul of America, Clinton and Clinton are on the other side, and George Bush is on our side.
I don't know about that last part, but the first minute and 7 seconds of that minute and 10-second clip was spot on. That was at the 1992 Republican National Convention. I guess he had to put that last part in there, you know, and I get it.
Nobody can turn a phrase like Pat Buchanan.
His prose as a writer, his rhetoric as an orator was unmatched by any who has ever been.
What a shame it was that he wasn't the vice president of Ronald Reagan.
Is that an exaggeration?
No, it's not. I just can't help but daydream and say, what would have happened to America if Ronald Reagan had chosen Pat Buchanan as his vice president for the second term rather than George H.W. Bush, and then we had a Buchanan presidency?
Because he almost, you know, he gave a hell of a run. And, well, 92, you know, he gave a spirited run. In 96, he was a contender. I mean, truly a contender. Reagan could have put him there. Reagan wasn't our guy. Pat was. I don't know if everybody likes Pat as much as I do. You got to understand, I had personal experience. I got my start with the guy. I wouldn't be here 20 years on the radio, almost. I mean, technically, this is our 19th year on the radio.
Afar.
This is technically our 19th year on the radio. You view it from afar, Keith, but you know what I brought into the radio studio tonight? You could share with the audience what we'll share with them now. I was showing Keith my personal scrapbook, pictures that have never been published, pictures nobody else has seen. Keith saw them tonight. What'd you see, Keith?
I saw things that could probably get people fired. No, he had a great.
What else did you see, though?
No, I saw pictures of you, a young man with a full head of hair, next to Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan looking studious and, you know, jovial at the same time.
At how many different locations?
Oh, as many as you can imagine, all over the country, all over the fruited plain, as Rush Limbaugh used to say. And just imagine the America we would have if we had had a President Pat Buchanan rather than George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush.
Don't I dream about it. Don't I dream about it. But it wasn't just that incredible year in my life. You know, time and circumstance have to intersect. I was at a point in my life in the year 2000 where I wasn't yet married. I was still there, you know, just out of high school, and I had the opportunity to do this year.
Everything was possible at that point.
It was all possible, and so I had this year that I could just spend, and did, and it paved the way. God's will be done. It paved the way for the rest of my life. But the whole rest of my life was minted in the year 2000. My own campaign, keeping the Buchanan brigades in Tennessee and in this region together, behind my campaign for the Tennessee State House in 2002, which absolutely directly paved my way into radio. There's no doubt about it. From Buchanan to my own campaign to radio, without any of those steps, none of it happens.
Well, like Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones said, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you might find that you get what you need.
Weren't they prophetic? You got a CD there, Keith, on your desk here at the studio right now, a couple of the Buchanan interviews. It wasn't just that I worked for him in 2000. He came on with us, you know this, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a regular listener, for a series of interviews long after the fact, well into the 2000s.
And he never backed down and never...
Well, he got called on it. Every single time he got called on it, he never backed down. The last time he got asked about it on National Public Radio, and he defended us on National Public Radio, I quit asking him. This is a joke I tell. It's partially a joke. The truth is, I quit asking him on after that because he'd got so savage the first three, you know, a handful of times, the first three times. Because I didn't want to damage him anymore. You know, that's a partial joke, but it's partially true. He defended us all the way to the hilt every single time. He never backed down.
I mean, all the bullets bounced off him.
I know a lot of friends with a lot less prestige and status that would have thrown us under the bus at the first sound of the shooting. He never did. He's retired his pen. That's why we're talking about him tonight. 84 years of age last November. His column is no more, and may his remaining days be peaceful and bountiful.
Well, I hope we hear from him again.
Well, I tell you, 19 years on the radio, not one of them would have been without him. That is not an exaggeration, Keith.
He's been here in the room with us time and again. You know, it's just, and I'm talking about spiritually. He has been our spiritual North Star, if you want to know the truth, folks, as much as anyone else, any single person in the world.
Read a lot of stuff about him this week when he officially announced his retirement. Scott McConnell, a lot of people who worked with him professionally, saying all of these things. Now, I was a grunt in the Buchanan campaign in 2000, but I had the chance to, you know, rub shoulders with him many times that year. And
would it be an exaggeration to say he changed your life?
No, he absolutely changed. That year changed my life. There's no doubt about it. Without that campaign, there's no James Edwards for state representative in 2002 with the remnants of the Buchanan campaign in this region.
And there's no political cesspool.
There's no political cesspool because the political cesspool got its start because I made enough of a name for myself in my run for the state house in 2002 that was given birth by the Buchanan campaign itself. Well, anyway, so it's not indirectly, but directly responsible. The last 19 years on the radio, directly responsible for that fateful meeting in January. This is how we opened the show tonight. In January of 2000 at Andrew Jackson's home in Nashville, which gave rise to my involvement with the campaign. And I said at the top of the show tonight, the first hour, the different responsibilities I was given by the campaign, one after the other, all the way to at the end of that year in 2000, doing TV appearances as a surrogate of the campaign at 20 years of age. But Keith, you saw some pictures tonight that I have never showed anybody else. Nobody's seen these pictures. Maybe one day we'll share them.
Well, there was no cross-dressing, I can tell you that. No, this is just, I mean, Pat Buchanan just shone like the North Star. He had a luminous presence, and everywhere he did, he'd light up a room. It's quite obvious. And James,
there's so many people who knew him and worked with him. You know, he was embarrassed if he got a contribution. He didn't like to call high level donors because it seemed an affront to him that they would have given so much. And there's all of that stuff about him being a gentleman and being
a scholar and a gentleman.
You know, a class act all the way. I can vouch for that in my limited experience. I don't know him as, you know, obviously. You know, it's like the general doesn't call his soldier. It wasn't like when I got on with the campaign, I called Pat every day. Hey, Pat, what do you want me to do today? No, I mean, it was the general doesn't call the grunts every day. But, you know, through my work up the ranks in that year, we got well enough along to where he agreed to come on the show anytime I asked him to. And those were some great interviews in the early 2000s on this show when we were cutting our teeth, you know, those interviews.
Well, those great books like Death of the West and Suicide of a Superpower and Hitler, Churchill, and the Unnecessary War. He had so many great books.
We talked all about them on this show. and not just did we talk about it. We talked about it like, hey, you know, did you hear what Marcus, you know, it was insider trading a little bit of it. Did you hear what Linda Mueller? These are all people that only, you know, we would have known if you were on the campaign. And just, we're kind of, you know, we got into that on some of those interviews. Well, any event, he was a class act all the way. I wouldn't be here without him. The political cesspool would have never been without him. And all the people I met, I remember all of those people. I can name every person who was a delegate for the Buchanan campaign, the Buchanan Reform Party Convention in Long Beach, California in 2000, districts 1 through 9, the Tennessee congressional electoral districts. I can name every single delegate. I can name the at-large board of directors of the Tennessee Reform Party in 2000. Those people gave me a chance. I was 19, 20 years old. They let me have an opportunity. Without that, without their faith in me, I would have never had the faith in myself to run for office and to start this radio program. It all started with Pat Buchanan. That is not an exaggeration. That is in no uncertain terms. Whatever good you think this radio program has done, thank Pat Buchanan, who retired his pen this week officially at 84 years of age. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Worldwide, what's called ethno-nationalism, I fear that this is really the coming force in the world, that and religious fundamentalism, and you can see these tearing countries apart all over the world.
You know, when you talk about the cult of diversity in the book, and this is a follow-up to the topic that we're on, it seems as though the white politicos who are explicitly involved, they seem to work against their own group interests rather than for them, as the minorities do. Again, this chapter that you write on the cult of diversity, I have to ask this question. Why do white liberals remain entranced by diversity when the social and cultural effects of diversity are almost entirely negative for themselves and their children and grandchildren?
Well, I think there's many people, candidly, who I've been asked on radio that what is wrong if, I mean, why isn't it a really good thing when whites become a minority nationwide and we're all part of minorities? And I say, you know, this thing, I mean, it's real problems are attendant to this. But I think that there are some, if you, James, if you go with the average American, let's take the fellow that does the anti-affirmative action, the civil rights initiative things, and he conducted those which abolished affirmative action in Michigan by referendum, in California by referendum, and in Washington by referendum, in three states that normally vote Democratic. So the vast majority of the American people, and even among the young in the Ivy League, there's a feeling that racial preferences and affirmative action are simply unjust, because there's a great belief in those among the young that everybody should have a shot, you know, at getting on the team or getting in the band or whatever, but the prize should go to those who are the best and work the hardest. And the idea that people should be discriminated against, whether they're white, black, Asian, or whatever, because of the color of their skin or where their ancestors come from, I think they find that profoundly offensive. And the and so I think the further we go down the road with this affirmative action, especially, when now the women qualify for affirmative action, Hispanics do, although there was no slavery of Hispanics, and African Americans do, you got 30% of the country, white males, who are really the ones who are the victims of affirmative action, not the beneficiaries, and yet they're 30% of the country, but they're 75% of the dead and wounded coming back from Afghanistan. That's not a formula for social peace.
No, it's not. And if these disenfranchised white males tried to gather together politically to assert their group interests, of course, they would be shouted down as bigots, racists, supremacists, so on and so forth.
Well, you know, Shelby Steele wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal a number of years ago. He's an African-American intellectual and scholar.
Right.
And he said this type of, if you will, racial identity politics is simply denied to whites. I don't know that he was saying this was a good thing, but because of their history and because of the guilt and all the rest of it, and he's in, and clearly when this type of organization took place, it would be denounced. But I remember there was not long ago, I guess it was several years ago, they had a meeting over in Leesburg of the Asian American Caucus, the African American Caucus, and the Hispanic Caucus to decide how they could get more benefits out of the Congress for their own communities. And you're saying, wait a minute, at whose expense are these going to come? So I think that's regrettably, because I think that's where America's headed.
Well, and let's talk about that in game. I know we only have about a minute and a half left. I think you were originally scheduled to stay with us just till the half hour. Would it be possible for you to stay just five more minutes after
the
break?
Sure, I'll be happy to do it.
Thank you so much, Pat, because I want you to mull over this question. We'll try to get into it a little bit, and then we'll wrap it up on the flip side. And then I know you have many more engagements this evening, but let's talk about the end road. Where does this end? All the liberal, multiracial, multicultural utopia fantasies that are destroying American pride and prosperity. You wrote in your syndicated column this week, we don't share the same heroes, faith, or even the same language anymore. If current trends prevail, what are we going to look like in 2025?
Well, this is it. You ask yourself, what are the basics of a nation? It is a common language, common borders. I think a common faith and moral consensus and moral code, certainly a common history and heroes and holidays, all those things that make up the culture, literature. But we don't share, you're right. We did share those black and white when I grew up in Washington, D.C. Even though we were a segregated town, we shared all those things in common.
Sure.
And now we have very little in common that we share. And in addition to that, our politics and ideology are dividing us. So if all these things go and we no longer have the Cold War to unite us where we could all stand together against Nazism or Bolshevism or something, and communism, then what do we have left?
Pat, hold on right there. Let's pause right there. We're going to pick it up right after the break and let you finish that thought.
There was a lot more to that particular interview. That was just one of a handful that he made on this program, Keith Alexander. There was more to that before and after. But that is an interview that we give to donors to this program who are making a first-time donation. We send it out to everybody. We have it on CD. We have a lot of copies of that. I tell you what, those are the questions that it sounded like he wanted to be asked.
Exactly. He was right on topic with you. See, that's what really attracted me to Pat Buchanan. If there's any person in the United States that ought to be the poster child for victims of affirmative action, that would be me.
Now, he didn't say, hey, James, don't ask that question. That's a racist question. He said, you know what? This is the facts of the matter.
See, I was born in 1951 in the first one-third of the baby boom generation. When I was 18, graduated from high school, applying to college, that's when affirmative action became the official enforcement policy of the EEOC under Alfred Bloom Rosen, a Jewish law professor from Rutgers who was the number two man at the EEOC. So I've lived from it from the moment I stepped out of high school and applied to college until now. I'm 72. Maybe this year the Supreme Court will outlaw affirmative action, but it's too late for me. See, my entire academic, higher academic, and work career has been lived under the baleful shadow of affirmative action. And let me tell you, when you're young, you think you're going to overcome all of this stuff. As you get older, you realize you're not. That these government policies really have an effect. Opportunities that I should have had based on my LSAT scores and grade point average and job qualifications went to other less qualified people because of affirmative action. There is real life consequences to these policies, and no one wants to stand up. I haven't heard anybody offering the victims of affirmative action reparations, but I hear random black people that never lived under slavery in a state that never had slavery being offered up to $5 million a head, at least that's being proposed for reparations. What about for the real reparations for people that had diminished careers and earning capacity because of affirmative action? That's the type of thing that most politicians will run for cover if it comes out. Pat Buchanan waded into it with, he had both barrels blazing when he went in on those things, and that's why he got my attention and my support and still has it till the blessed end.
Well, folks, we opened the show tonight with me looking back. Just this week, Pat Buchanan officially announced that he was retiring his pen, ending his syndicated column. He's 84 years old last November. And it got me thinking about that year that I spent with him, that blessed year in the year 2000 that gave birth to everything that would follow. My own campaign for the State House, which gave birth to this radio program, is just a direct path. No way to over or understate that. And so he's been on our minds. And so I was sharing with Keith some pictures from that year that nobody else has seen outside of the family, family pictures. And we're talking about it a little bit now.
One of the blessings of your life was your
all of it. I would have never met you, Keith, had it not been for Pat Buchanan. I mean, that's just not. I mean, you can't.
There are always negatives to figure
in. No. I mean, for everybody that I've ever talked to on this program, there would be no program without Buchanan. So, for everybody that has become a lifelong friend and comrade and brother of mine, as a result of my work on this program, thank Pat Buchanan. And, Pat was good enough to come on all of those times we asked him to come on the show, always defend us, even though he lost his job at MSNBC. All of it, he was just a stand-up guy all the way around. And a lot of people saying recently they can't go to a conservative event in Washington, D.C. without people mentioning the name Pat Buchanan now. Well, where was that in 1992 and 1996 and then 2000? But the ideas now have won over, and he was the...
He was the real thing. There was no effort to, fake out the electorate. Everything that he said, he believed with every fiber of his being.
Yep, no doubt about it. I shared the story, I think, in that Countercurrents speech that I gave at the Countercurrents conference. There's a lot of stories you haven't heard yet, audience. We'll tell them one day. But I did share one thing at the Countercurrents event in Atlanta last fall that when we had the campaign down in Memphis for that high school auditorium event, the first question asked out of the crowd was something about Pat had written about the Holocaust 30, 40 years earlier. Peter Gemma, who was the national communications director, Peter Gemma has been on the show many times. Maybe some of you know him through other efforts. But Peter looked at me and said, Every single time. That was before every single time was a meme. He said something to that extent. Every single time, or I knew that would happen. Something like that, he said. An expectation that the first question would be about something Pat had written about the Holocaust, you know, 30 years before.
Well, you know, Lausanne is kind of unofficially a Jewish school in Memphis, so it's not surprising.
Well, that's right. Let's leave it with this, ladies and gentlemen. February the 10th, 2000, Lexington, Kentucky. Happy retirement, Pat Buchanan. We'll see you next week, everybody. Good night and God bless you.